This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. You know, with all the talk about Ebola, a deadly virus for which there is no vaccine, many people still don't appreciate the gravity of that now annual visitor to our shores, the flu virus, and the importance of getting vaccinated every year for the flu. Well, here with more on this are Dr. Yana Shaw. She's Associate Professor of Pediatrics, specializing in pediatric immunology and infectious diseases at Upstate Medical University and Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital, and Cerise Murata, who in 2009 lost her 5-year-old son to the flu. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
So, Dr. Shaw, why is it so important to be vaccinated for the flu each year, and what are the current CDC recommendations?
So influenza is a highly communicable infectious disease, and it currently causes a number of hospitalizations in the United States among healthy and ill people. CDC recommends universal immunizations, which means anybody 6 months and older should get vaccinated against influenza. And the main reason being is that influenza can cause very serious illness, hospitalizations, and death.
And it's especially important for people who are high risk of complications, like pregnant women, older adults, and young children.
Correct. So people who have underlying medical conditions, even asthma, diabetes, heart disease, they're particularly vulnerable to severe influenza. But we should not forget that children were particularly hard hit with H1N1 in 2009, and those were healthy children who died of influenza.
That's exactly the story that you have to share, Cerise. Tell us about your story, because I understand your son did receive a flu vaccine, but it was the year of the H1N1, which was not part of that flu vaccination.
Correct. At the time, we actually lived near Cincinnati, Ohio, and I've always been pro-vaccination. Every year, got my kids vaccinated against the flu as well as ourselves. My husband and I. And that year, Joseph and his sister got their seasonal flu vaccines at the end of September. And the H1N1 was just coming around. We were just starting to hear about it. But the vaccine was not yet available in our community. So we got a call one day. Joseph was actually in kindergarten at the time. And we got a call one day that he threw up on the bus. So we went and picked him up and, you know, brought him home. And he was continuing to vomit throughout the day. We weren't overly concerned, but then he was becoming very lethargic. So we ended up calling the pediatrician and asked them, you know, what we should do. And they suggested that we take him to the local urgent care, which we did. So when we got there, they took a reading for his oxygen levels, and they were very low. So they immediately put him in an ambulance and sent him to the local children's hospital. So that night, they admitted him. They diagnosed him with pneumonia, and they had done a rapid test for the flu, which came back negative. You know, in hindsight being 2020, we find out now that those rapid tests at the time weren't that helpful.
Or accurate.
Accurate, correct. So, you know, we were kind of going along with pneumonia. He was in the ICU to begin with. Had him on a couple different antibiotics. They were concerned about MRSA, you know, so the doctors were talking to us about that. After about 2 days, they downgraded him out of the ICU just to the regular pediatric floor. And, you know, he was relatively stable. You know, we were kind of monitoring him, continued on the medication. And then a few days into his hospital stay, the doctors came in and said, well, this is really strange. His culture is growing influenza, even though he had the rapid test that came back negative. They also did a PCR test, which came back negative, which I understand maybe it wasn't calibrated, if that's the right word,
what
for
is
H1N1.
Maybe you can help us to understand that a bit better.
Yes, H1N1 during 2009 was a novel vaccine, and some of the detection methods we had would not pick it up at that time. So,
not a novel virus, one that hadn't come to our shores.
Correct. So, for example, the rapid methods are quite insensitive. That's why new PCR-based methods have been developed, and the one that we have currently available will detect H1N1 pretty rapidly and accurately.
So a PCR is a blood test? They take a blood sample and can determine what?
So PCR is a method that detects actually DNA of the virus, and it's the PCR uses actually nasopharyngeal swabs, nose swabs, where the respiratory viruses, including influenza, reside. So typically what we do during winter seasons, the children who get admitted to the hospitals, they will, with pneumonias or upper respiratory infections, they will get their noses swabbed, and we will be looking for a variety of respiratory viruses, including H1N1.
So that's a more, at this point, a more conclusive type of test. But at that time, you were saying it wasn't able to pick up the H1N1.
Right, it wasn't picking up the H1N1. So when they came in and told us that his culture was growing influenza, the doctor at that time that we were dealing with was actually the chief of infectious diseases. You know, so our comfort level was very high. This doctor had been practicing medicine a long time. And he came in and he said, don't worry about it, it's just the flu. Even if it's H1N1, because they didn't have a diagnosis at that time, they just knew it was influenza. It's just like any other flu. We will start him on, you know, the antiviral medication along with all the other stuff that he was on for the pneumonia. So, okay, we were, you know, going about our business. Joseph's condition, you know, there were a couple odd things that were happening. They had a bunch of specialists come through. Like a cardiologist, they were checking his kidneys, they were checking all the, you know, the organ functions, and everything was coming back fine. So it was really just, let's focus on the pneumonia, let's get him well. He's on the antiviral, we're good to go. So the ninth day that he was in the hospital, my husband and I actually had to switch out because of the H1N1, there was a strict no visitation policy, and our daughter at that time was 7. So she couldn't come into the hospital. So my husband and I would trade off in the lobby with her. So it was a Saturday morning. When I left the hospital that morning, Joseph was alert. He was talking. You know, at no point was I worried throughout the 9 days at that point. It was just like, we're doing what we have to do. We were monitoring his medications. You know, the nurses and doctors would come in and I was like, okay, what's this? What's going on with that? And, you know, communicating back and forth so that we really fully understood what was happening with Joseph. But, you know, no fear in my mind. It was just, we were going to take care of this and get out of the hospital. So that Saturday morning, I had spent the night. So I had left in the morning and my husband was staying. And when I left, Joseph was, you know, I had him out of bed. We were, you know, playing with cars on the table, and he was watching cartoons and, you know, just being himself. Still sick, mind you. You know, he had been running a fever throughout the week. He had some abdominal pain at one point, which they did some diagnostic tests, and they had said that they were concerned about a couple different things, pancreatitis and such. And they ruled that out. And they finally attributed his abdominal pain to the pneumonia because it was in the lower left lobe of his lung. And they said, well, that's normal. And the fact that he's got the flu, they made the comment that they had kids coming in with the flu that they originally thought had appendicitis because they had such extreme abdominal pain. So again, I thought, okay, there's a logical explanation for all this stuff. We're doing what we need to do. So Saturday morning I left. My husband was there. I came back probably late afternoon. And when I walked in, my husband came down to the lobby and said, they're taking Joseph back to ICU. And I was like, what is going on here? So we went up to his room, you know, put a mask on our daughter, Emma, and took her into the room. And the nurses were running in and out. And that was the first time little bells started going off in my head, like something's not right. And they said, well, his blood pressure's so low, we can't get a read. And the nurses were kind of, they're trying to be calm, but they appeared a little bit panicked. So I said, okay, please get the doctor up here so I can talk to her and, you know, whatnot. So they said, okay, this is what's going on. We think his sodium levels are off because he's been on IV fluids all week. And I said, okay, so we're going to take him back to ICU, do some more testing. We can't figure out what's going on. So because his blood pressure was so low, his respiration, his heart rate were really high. So we get down to the ICU. We were there a couple hours. My husband ended up taking our daughter home. And, you know, they just were doing constant streams of blood work and x-rays and all this stuff. And they kept, you know, communicating with me, okay, this looks normal. This is normal. About 3 o'clock in the morning, the attending came in and she said to me, this is so strange. We can't figure out what's going on with him. And she was asking me about my health history. She said, maybe we think something maybe is going on with his adrenal glands because they couldn't rectify his blood pressure. So that was the main concern. Like, something is going awry here and we can't figure out what's causing it. So that was about 3 o'clock in the morning, about 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, still having the tests going on. And Joseph, poor thing, I mean, he was still being himself. He was still conscious. He was still alert. He was still talking to me. At about 6 o'clock in the morning, the attendant came to me and said, I want to put him on a ventilator just because his little body's working so hard. We just want to give his body a break, but he's going to be unconscious when he's on it. So you might want to call your husband. And again, I thought, okay, you know, nobody was giving me any notion that this is life or death. This is critical. This is just what we need to do. So everybody was very calm. I was calm. I called my husband and I explained to him, I said, you better come up here. So they came up, he came up, and a couple minutes after I got off the phone with him, Joseph coded, and they worked on him for 35 minutes and they couldn't revive him. And come to find out, he had an ulceration in his duodenum that had a catastrophic rupture in it, and that's what had killed him. And they explained to me that was a complication of H1N1.
Very sad. And it was the flu, which again, Dr. Shaw, underscores the fact that the flu can kill.
Yeah, I think this is an extremely sad but unfortunately common example of what flu can do, including to healthy children. Joseph was a healthy boy, and Cerise has vaccinated. So the influenza changes its appearance to our immune system every year. So it's very important to get vaccinated every year because the new virus can reemerge. And it's also important to vaccinate all children, not just the ill ones.
Cerise, your family has become very much advocates for the influenza vaccine. In the little bit of time we have left, what do you tell people?
To get your annual flu vaccine. You know, we work with an organization, a national nonprofit called Families Fighting Flu, and our whole objective really is to educate people about the seriousness of influenza and the importance of annual vaccination. And from my personal perspective, it's not just about yourself and your family. It's protecting your community as well. So I really see it as a social responsibility.
Because when we don't do it, then our herd immunity, so to speak, the community's immunity drops, and more people, especially the most vulnerable, are more susceptible to the flu.
Exactly.
Or to any of these vaccines that we need to make sure our kids get. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing this very heartbreaking story. And I think that you will serve to inspire people. It's our hope, and I'm sure yours, to get their kids vaccinated, to get themselves vaccinated, and to really take this very, very seriously. Once again, thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you.
My guests have been Dr. Yana Shaw. She's Associate Professor of Pediatrics, specializing in pediatric immunology and infectious diseases at Upstate Medical University and the Golisano Children's Hospital, and Cerise Murata, who in 2009 lost her 5-year-old child, her son, to the flu. Once again, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.